Welcome back to Money Life, where it's time for the book interview. The book interview for us, of course, is our normal big interview in terms of size and what have you. But our topic, well, it's a book. It's a business or investing book that we believe you should be looking at. And today, my guest is Jay Hummel. He is co-author of The Essential Advisor, Building Value in the Investor-Advisor Relationship. Now, you know, if you listen to this show, that in my background, there are two books that I've written on choosing and working with advisors. So I believe the subject essential in terms of how you wind up creating these relationships. Jay, by the way, is Managing Director for Strategic Initiatives and Thought Leadership at InvestNet, which you may be familiar with because we've had InvestNet guests on the show before. If you want to learn more, well, you can go to investnet.com/essential advisor. You can follow InvestNet, the firm, on Twitter at ENV Intel. And Jay is on Twitter. He's at ENV Hummel. Jay Hummel, welcome to Money Life.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I like the book, which is saying something because, as I said, I've written two books myself on choosing and working with financial advisors. The one thing I will note to my audience right away is that some of this book is definitely aimed at the consumer, at the folks who are being my audience, and some of it feels a little bit more like it's, hey, this is what best practices are, so if you're an advisor, you should learn best practices. Now, that's important to consumers too, because they need to understand, hey, am I getting best practices or is my guy not a great advisor? But for you, how much of the advisor-investor relationship is about how the guy practices, how the advisor runs their portfolio and deals with people, and how much of it is simply interpersonal? Am I finding somebody who inherently I trust, whose style works with me, who, you know, I can feel good about or and my spouse can feel good about?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably 75% the way they run their practice, and I think it's 25% just human relationship. I think, you know, advice, we believe the human advisor is essential, and we believe it's essential for individual investors to get good advice. But we recognize that it's much like any relationship, and we think it only works when there's trust and there's style similarities, and you lay in bed at night and you feel good about the relationship you have with the advisor. So I'd say it's 75% the way an advisor actually runs their practice and about 25% the interpersonal relationship.
Which, in your opinion, is it easier for the consumer to divine? Is it easier for you to say, hey, I get a sense of this person? Or is it easier for you to say, let me get a sense of the practice and, you know, when I'm going to hear from you and what you're going to do for me, et cetera?
I think individually, it's probably easier to get a feel for style because you know, most people can actually feel that the first time they sit down with an individual. I recommend end investors get the feel for how a practice runs by talking to the advisor's current clients. I think they're going to get a feel from real stories, from real clients, about how that advisor communicates when the market's down or the market's up, how the advisor communicates when there's a life event, when there's the death of a spouse. So I always encourage people when they're assessing advisors to get advisors to give them recommended customers or current investors or current clients to talk to so they can get a feel about how that advisor interacts with their current clients.
I am so glad you said that because I agree completely. And yet, having written my two books on choosing and working with financial advisors, the number one thing I heard back from advisors is you demand too much of us when you're saying we need to give you current references. And we don't like to give references because you know what references are going to say. They're going to be our biggest fans. And you're telling people, because I have, hey, if an advisor doesn't want to give you a reference, just say, give me your last client. Give me the person who was just in here as what was walking out as I walked in. How do you get somebody when they don't, to you, is that a deal breaker? Because it's pretty close to one for me. But you just talked about it's, you can get that by talking to somebody. And again, I don't believe you should be asking their current clients like, hey, how much money did this guy make for you? That's
exactly
not the kind of question you want to ask. But that's what advisors think you're going to ask. So you agree, hey, it's really essential that you talk to past clients. But what if they don't want to give them to you? What do you do at that point?
Well, one, I'd be a little bit worried. I do agree with one of their comments. It's a little bit like a resume. Of course, the advisor is going to give the best recommendations. But if I was the end investor talking to the advisor, I'd say, I don't want to talk to them about I don't want to cocktail party benchmark you. I don't want to talk to them about performance. I don't want to talk to them about returns. I want to get a feel for how they interact with you and how the relationship feels, because that's why I think that the discussion should happen. And again, I think it's questions like, so when you had a big event in your life, did you call the advisor? Is that the kind of relationship that you've built with this advisor? Is that the kind of relationship that the advisor wants with you? And just give me an example. How do they give you statements? How do you interact with them on technology? How do they talk to you about, your life? Do you meet with them once a year? Do you meet with them four times a year? So I think the discussion should be about the client experience, not necessarily about performance, because I do think advisors think that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, no, I agree completely that, you know, it's not the questions that they think you're going to ask. And like I said, I'm a huge believer. Just give me whoever had my appointment a week ago today. And if they are a good client, they would never mind the fact that you called them up and said, hey, you might be hearing from so-and-so, a potential customer. I picked them because, you know, you had the 11 o'clock appointment on Wednesday last week and they have it this week. But under any circumstances, let's move forward a little bit. Right now, we are seeing an evolution in the advisory world on two different fronts. One is caused by the Department of Labor changing the rules on fiduciary standards. And we're still waiting for the SEC to add its rules to the mix. How much, in your opinion, does fiduciary change what an advisor does, but also what an advisor can do? Because there are a lot of things that advisors have been doing that at some point in a court of law might not be considered in somebody's best interest. You know, they're putting you into an annuity product that is not that has a high level of fees, but they're putting you into an annuity product if they're an honest advisor, because you need peace of mind and that's going to generate it. So how much, we'll start with fiduciary. How much is that changing, in your opinion, the advisor investor relationship?
Oh, I think it's going to change drastically for a certain segment of advisors. I make the argument, I always say, I like to stay away from the F word because everybody argues about fiduciary and the definition. So I tend to step back and take a broader view, which is, how do you define a great advisor? You define a great advisor who understands the needs, understands the individual needs of an individual client, can assess that, and makes the best recommendation to solve a problem, to get a client to a goal, sitting on the same side of the table as the client. And I think no matter how the SEC or the DOL defines fiduciary going forward, I believe the best advisors, as they exist today, will likely run their practices in a way that's very similar on the other side of any regulatory environment.
The other thing that is changing dramatically in the financial planning world is the advent of robo-advice. And robo-advice is basically, hey, put all your details into something of a black box and it'll come out with the solutions that you need. Is that changing the landscape for advisors who are human and not robo in terms of what they need to do, what they need to provide, what cost level they're going to provide it at, and so on? Because to me, the problem with robo advice is very simple. It's that people hire advisors for emotional discipline, for the ability to say, okay, give me a plan and then help me stick with it. Well, you're not getting any emotion out of a robo. A robo is incapable of emotion. Some advisors, unfortunately, are not that capable of emotion either and seem to think that their job is more picking the investments. So how is that landscape changing things for you?
Oh, it's changing drastically. I mean, that value proposition of I only manage your money and I put you in low-cost ETF portfolios and I maybe rebalance them every once in a while, which frankly is the value proposition of probably 25% of the advisory community. That is dead going forward because that's commoditized and it can be replaced. I agree strongly with what you just said, which is the best part of an advisor is emotional coaching. It's getting an investor to stay invested in a bad market cycle. But it's also being there when a life event happens. We analyze this. We believe there's 11 life events from the time someone graduates and gets their first job all the way to the time they pass on. And those are events where emotion and financial decisions actually come together and where human advice really matters. And so when you really look at the robo movement, I think it's very good for a simple accumulator, probably a young investor that doesn't necessarily have those life events. But for your audience who are in retirement, they're in decumulation phase, they're thinking about estate planning and transferring wealth onto their next generation, digital-only technology, in my opinion, will never be good in those phases of their life.
Will they be able to coexist?
Absolutely. We get the question all the time, do you think the human advisor is going to be more relevant, less relevant, or equally relevant 5 years from now? And my opinion is they're going to be more relevant because life is not getting simpler for end investors, but they cannot run their practices the way they have in the past. They're going to leverage technology to help them manage money, to help them rebalance portfolios, to help better communicate with end investors so that they can actually change the way they spend their time. And they're going to spend their time building relationships, spending their time with the families that they serve, and that's the future.
Well, Jay, this has been great. Thanks so much for taking time out to talk with me about the book and to join me on Money Life.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jay Hummel is co-author of The Essential Advisor, Building Value in the Investor-Advisor Relationship. If you want more information, go to investnet.com/essential advisor. And Jay, by the way, is Managing Director, Strategic Initiatives and Thought Leadership at InvestNet. They're online at investnet.com. Jay's on Twitter. He's at ENVHummel. All right, we just hit the halfway pole on today's show, but halfway means we got plenty more to go. So settle back and relax. We're living the money life, and we'll be back to it in just a moment.